On the eve of training camp, the New Orleans Saints missing one of their key players, a holdout. When can you ever say there was one of those in the Sean Payton era? Well, we were off yesterday. LSU did the ribbon-cutting ceremonies to their new $28 million renovation of their football ops building. We'll get an inside look at that. Plus, who's going to be the hot coach after this season? Every year, one pops up that moves from a group of five to a power five. We'll discuss that and much, much more. We're getting ready for football season today, Thursday, July 25th, 2019.
One swung on and line toward the gap in left center field. A long run for Cave. Can't get there. A base hit going all the way to the wall. Judge scores. Here comes Hicks. He scores. Didi to third with a triple.
Baez is running. Bryan hits a high fly ball. Deep left center. Back to the warning track. That ball's got a chance. Gone. Chris Bryant, a two-run home run. Cubs lead 3-0.
As far as the last few years, as far as a basketball standpoint, the Clippers have been better. It's media, you know what I mean? They're going to get the attention. You know what I mean? The Los Angeles Lakers, they've been winning championships for a long time. But even if we do win, who knows how the coverage will change over. And I don't feel like I'm focused on that. I'm just want to win.
Can he win a title with his third NBA team? One as a Spur, as a background player. One as a star of the Toronto Raptors. And now teaming up with Paul George to play with the L.A. Clippers. Said he grew up a Clippers fan, and Lakers have all the history, all the banners. Clippers have nothing. He wants to set a tone for that. That was Kawhi Leonard. The Astros keep on winning. They're at 66 wins now, just two games shy of the Yankees' 60, well, actually tied with the Yankees at 66 wins overall. So Astros hot in the AL West. Good afternoon. Great to be back with you after the Astros took our time slot yesterday. We try and please all of you. Whether unlike the battle lines being drawn between the LSU football program and outsiders, again, my point is, look, if they can raise it, good for them. Good for them. Just because sports is more popular than the library, people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, they don't go back to the library to sit down and look around, but they sure like to go tailgate and go to football games and watch the Tigers on the field when they're on television. They sure like to do that. But we have a busy show planned for you and yours, a very busy one today. Brody Miller of The Athletic was there yesterday. He'll share his thoughts in hour number two, as will Michael Huguenin. And we'll talk about the landscape of college football. So many schools have realigned themselves in different conferences. If they could go back in time and have a do-over, is there a team or teams that would say, you know what, the grass isn't greener on the other side? We're going to stay put. So we'll go over that with him. Larry Holder will join us in this hour to talk about the New Orleans Saints. And that's where we lead off today, because Michael Thomas is not reporting to camp as we speak right here, right now. The ultra-gifted wide receiver who hopes to become the highest-paid wide receiver in the league has been absent. Now, he went to OTAs, which is not mandatory, but he's not here now. Saints veterans scheduled to report to camp today. The first practice scheduled for tomorrow. Thomas is due to make $1.148 million in the final year of his rookie contract. and he's subject to a maximum fine of $40,000 per day for missing camp. Well, you can forget about that. He's not. They're not going to find him. How long this takes, I don't think it's going to be very long. But we'll talk to Larry Holder about that. So sit back and relax on that one. Meanwhile, on other fronts, LSU has announced their policy for alcoholic beverages inside Tiger Stadium. Yes, indeed, it's inevitable, and it's here upon us. And now there's a lot of meetings taking place to figure out the best way to go about and do this thing, because you get all those people involved in one area. You got to have guidelines. You got to have rules. You got to have stipulations, and you got to train people on how to do it and how to detect things. Scott Woodward, LSU's athletic director, said this is all about enhancing the fan experience, responding to the feedback from our fans and doing it responsibly. You can get beer, and they're going to sell beer, both foreign and domestic. They're going to sell white wine and red wine. They're going to stop those sales at the end of the third quarter. They're going to follow the SEC policies that were adopted this spring, and they're going to go by the guidelines. So a lot of things going on with this. One, they're hoping that this will keep people in the seats. You know, you got to draw people because of the product on the field. Okay, LSU is supposed to be a very good team. Now, they don't play the greatest of teams all the time, so you got to do something to try and get people to come to the venue. How many people get up and leave at halftime? One, they don't want to fight the traffic. Number two, their buzz has worn off. They want to go back and start popping a few back again. I mean, I'm just being honest. That's how it works. Those things, you know, yeah, you can smuggle some things in. You take that chance. Some are very creative. Others try, and it just doesn't work. But that buzz wears off, and that's their escape from the real world, the entertainment factor. So they're hoping by selling this that it will keep people in the stands longer. When you drink a lot, you get hungry. You want to eat more. It's all part of the process to try and generate as much income as they can. So LSU staff and vendors will be undergoing training to properly facilitate institutional and conference policy. All servers will be instructed according to LSU policies and trained to identify public intoxication in order to refuse service to any fan who appears impaired. Now, you go up, you go up to buy your beer. You can't go buy for six of your friends. You can't say, give me six whatever your favorite brand. No, you can only get two. No cans, no bottles, no plastic things. It's all going to be poured into a cup. Then you take it back to your seat. And there you go. Now, not going to have them near the student section. Nope, you got to be 21. You have to show your ID and all those normal things that you have to do. I was kind of concerned last year when they had the beer garden, how that would work. Well, it went fine. Did not hear of one incident, one impropriety, one trouble spot. Never heard anything. If there was, boy, they kept it quiet. But I think they handled it very, very well. We'll see how this unfolds, and we'll find out how much money it generates, and we'll see if people stay a little bit longer, eat a little bit more, cheer a little bit louder. Hopefully there won't be any disruptions in the stands. I mean, you roll the dice on this kind of thing. You just do. But it's all about the fan experience. Can we get Wi-Fi in Tiger Stadium and a cell phone service that really, truly works? That's what I want. True cell phone service. That would be great. That would be great. Got to figure that one out. It's getting better, but not there yet. So you got that. You got the traffic issue. And so they're trying to make it more fun and more fan-friendly. And this is just the start. So we shall see. So that's what's happened as well. Elsewhere, Josh Gray, former LSU basketball player, has officially signed his two-way contract with the New Orleans Pelicans. Good for him. Good for him. Junior Zach Von Rosenberg is on the Ray Guy Award watch list as the big left-footed punter. That's a good thing. Boy, if LSU could ever just find another return specialist. LSU's basketball non-conference schedule is set. We found out about the LSU-Texas matchup in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. They will play in January in Austin, Texas. So schedule coming into play for LSU basketball. I think Will Wade's team is going to be really, really good. Really, really good. I really do. So just a few of the headlines that are going on around the world of sport. We'll get in more depth with this in just a minute. We are brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. We're here, there, and everywhere. And there's a reason why there's over 60 in southern and central Louisiana. If they weren't successful, they wouldn't build so many. But they are successful because they offer you everything that you need in one stop. One stop. My favorite's in Doosan. Man, it's beautiful. You can find everything there. It's worth the trip just to kind of go in and see it. It's great. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you just can't shop right at all. All right, we'll take our first time out of the day. It's Thursday. It's great to be back with you. Much more coming your way. CD taking us to break. We'll be back on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. It's all about the money. Show me the money, LSU says. Dig deep. Give it to us.
You're listening to the Jordy Holmberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
We're back. 337-706-0111. I've never seen anything quite like this time in LSU football with the line drawn in the sand with those in favor of the opulence of the football ops center and those on the other side saying, well, what about us? What about the library? What about this? What about that? I wish people would treat both entities equally. Well, that's never going to happen. It's just not. And look, if you think that LSU's the only school doing all this kind of stuff, you're grossly mistaken. There are other universities with Florida's about to open up a new facility. It just keeps going on and on and on. At least LSU spent their money for efficiency, and they didn't spend it on. Does a waterfall really care, count? What purpose does it serve other than just the look and to say, hey, we got a waterfall? A slide, a water slide in your building, does that do anything other than say, hey, look what we got? At least LSU did things in that. A nutrition center, the sleep pods for the players, the players' lounge that Tyrann Mathieu donated $1 million for, those type of things. The thing that I really need to go see and see it operate is their walkthrough room. You know, you go on the road with LSU football, they stay in these hotels, and when they have their walkthrough, they go into this meeting room, and sometimes, a lot of times, with places like in Starkville or in Auburn, Alabama, they don't have the Ritz-Carlton. They don't have the Four Seasons there. So you're staying in small kind of hotels. and it's very cramped and all that stuff. And as a player, you know, you can sit through scouting reports and this, that, and the other. The best thing you can do is get out there and see it and visualize it. And that's what LSU has with this walkthrough room. And as they came out with their subs on this, it features a wall and four projectors that will allow the team to participate in a virtual walkthrough. The offense can be projected on screen and controlled at a computer so the defense can adjust based on motion, formation, personnel, etc. So you plan, getting ready, you're preparing for Alabama, and you got Tua and Judy and Harris all lined up with their offensive line, that Alabama 11 offense, and Dave Aranda puts his defense on this turf field inside this walkthrough room, and somebody clicks a button, and you see Alabama go through their pre-snap read, and now LSU can look at it. They can make their adjustments like it's a real game. I mean, how cool is that? The purple turf extends the width of the hashes to ensure space for preparation and movement. And get this, movable walls allows the room to expand so they can actually make it like a real football field. And it's just amazing to me. And to me, seeing is always believing. You sit there and listen and hear and listen and hear, and your kids' minds, they deviate. Everybody's minds, their attention span is that much. Just like that. Boom. But you're out there and you're seeing it. It's more like a real football environment, and it just makes sense. Well, it just makes sense. So LSU spent their money not on, yeah, certainly they have visual things. You know, you got the video game, the papa shots, the theater seating, HD televisions, refreshments, ping pong tables, all that kind of stuff. Yes, yes. Coach's office is much nicer. But man, that nutrition center, so well needed, so well needed. And again, open to all student athletes, not just football. And they've got everything under the sun to do this. So I really wonder when Coach O leaves the facility, goes home, says hello to his family, puts his head on the pillow, closes his eyes, he's got to be thinking, wow, you know, be careful what you ask for. Because LSU's got everything now. They have spent the money to upgrade all the facilities. They've got the best of the best. Now your performance on the field has to match that. There are no more excuses. Not that they ever offered any excuses, but there are none anymore. They can't secretly behind closed doors say, man, we lost that recruit because Alabama's got a better weight room. Or we lost that recruit to Michigan because, you know, they've got better equipment. No more excuses. None. LSU's at the top of the heap until somebody else comes up with something else that nobody else thought of at the time. Those pods, no one's done that. Now, more and more schools will, but LSU kind of on the forefront there. So, again, not to beat a dead horse, but I have no problem with LSU football doing what they did. I have no problem at all. I believe full-heartedly that this has caused great discussion. This has opened up. How many people knew that the library was deteriorating? You never go to the library. You walk past it. On the outside, everything looks fine. Who goes into the inside unless you're a student that needs to use it? All those people that have parked their cars and are walking to Tiger Stadium or walking to Pete's Palace to watch a basketball game, who's stopping in to, oh, let me go check out the library? Nobody. But this I wonder if it's a conspiracy theory. This has opened up conversation. And the academic side of things is getting some attention. And what is it, the old adage? The squeaky wheel gets the grease? Well, there you go. Now's the time for the academic side to put their best foot forward and come up with a project to raise the funds necessary to upgrade their facilities. I'll be honest, I didn't know the Middleton Library was falling apart. I had no idea. None whatsoever. But it is. And I bet you, sooner than later, that process will begin. Because dialogue creates change. So this football ops building, the academic side should be saying, thank you. Now more people will understand our plight, and maybe we can get the things that we need necessary along those lines as well. So I think it's going to work out perfectly for everybody. But Coach O, got to keep winning. And you got to beat you-know-who. And you got to get to a Final Four pretty darn soon. And this could be the year. This could be the year. We shall see. Is this the year the Saints go back to the Super Bowl? They've got everything in place except a wide receiver. But don't despair. That won't be long. Larry Holder. We'll talk about the holdout as the New Orleans Saints begin training camp tomorrow here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station. We'll be right back.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
And we're back. Thursday edition, the Jordy Hultberg Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Veterans of the New Orleans Saints reporting to training camp. The first official training camp practice gets underway tomorrow. Larry Holder of The Athletic, kind enough to join us as a paying subscriber of The Athletic. Larry, I'm, glad to be a part of your future and your family's future, buddy. How are you?
That's right. I'm like Latrell Sprewell. I just got to feed my family, right? Is that what Michael Thomas is saying too? That might be the case.
I'm telling you. So, relatively speaking, the Saints have been a distraction-free team for the past 2 years. Michael Thomas. Not reporting, is this a holdout? And is this the first major off-the-field issue that you can recall in some time with the Saints?
Well, it's definitely a holdout. He's under contract. That is a holdout. It's the first holdout I can recall ever in the Peyton era. I don't think and I say this with about 99.9% certainty, there have been other times when way back when, say, Reggie Bush was a rookie and it still took him a couple of days to get to camp, but never someone who was under contract has held out. And so this is a little bit of a different territory. We've seen this plenty of enough times around the league. I've gotten enough reaction on Twitter from Saints fans on all different scopes, and my reaction to it is basically – the guy's about to make $1.2 million base salary. And if I'm him, I'm protecting myself too. I'm a player's guy. Maximize your value. He's one of the best, if not arguably the best receiver in the NFL. The Saints have no one else around him. And why is he going to go out there and risk this when they're talking contract and the deal has not gotten done yet? So, it's not surprising, and yet, on Jordy, on another aspect, I kind of expected him, though, to be at practice just he went through OTAs, which is not mandatory, and he went through mini camps. And I'm guessing that him and his agents thought, all right, a deal could get done over the summer, and then they'd have this thing hammered out. It's not. So in that sense, just of the way he navigated it, I was kind of a little, oh, well, all right, I guess he is going to sit out. But in the grand scheme of negotiating, this is not a surprise because I'm protecting myself because if he goes out there, hurts himself, guess who's not going to get somewhere around $20 million per year on average? And that would be Michael Thomas.
Larry Holder, The Athletic. It appears to me that it's not a Grand Canyon-wide difference between what Thomas's camp wants and what the Saints are willing to offer. It seems to be pretty close. I don't foresee this thing taking long. Do you?
Well, it depends on how much the Saints are dug in the sand. And, look, Mickey Loomis is no stranger to negotiating contracts. He's no stranger to negotiating big contracts. And he's no stranger to negotiating contracts with star players. I mean, this isn't new, but this is certainly something that they have not seen. So do they want to dig in and say, all right, we'll pay you a little bit more than Odell Beckham, who is the highest paid on average receiver in the NFL right now, at around $18 million? Or does Michael Thomas and his camp hell-bent on saying, no, we want to be the first to hit $20 million? And you're also playing a game of chicken with the other receivers looking for contracts in the NFL. So it's not just a game of chicken with the Saints or the Saints with Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas's agent, I'm sure, and I'm sure Michael Thomas to a degree, I mean, he's a competitive guy, knows his value. He wants to be the highest paid guy. They all want to be deemed that. Do people say, oh, wow, I mean, is he going to be happy in life if he gets paid $19.5 million per year? Sure, but they want to be the best. And so if there's a time to negotiate and pull this stuff, though, it is now. It's not like Michael Thomas is in need of the reps. It's not like Michael Thomas doesn't have a rapport with Drew Brees. He's in ultimate shape. That's not the problem here. I think some fans are wondering it's a bad look. I mean, okay, looks don't pay the bills if you get hurt. That's where I come from.
Normally, I say the ownership has the leverage because they're writing the checks, but you take Michael Thomas out of this offense, and this is a Super Bowl or bust kind of a year. Man, he's so valuable. I got to say, he's got the leverage.
I'd say he's got a certain amount of leverage, but it's also, do you want to have bad PR, this, that, the other? I mean, the longer this goes, the longer it looks bad. I'd say more for the player because he's away from the team. He looks selfish, you know, that kind of story. And Michael Thomas has not really ever been known as that. Someone joked on Twitter to me that he just hired Clutch Sports, and he's going Anthony Davis, and he's going to pull something like that. But he does have a degree of leverage. But this thing, I bet you in a couple weeks, this thing at maximum, I'd say. Who knows how really long this goes? But once this is over, this gets forgotten. I mean, it's just in the now, and people are like, oh, my gosh, it's hurt. It's a distraction to the team. I don't really think it's going to be that big of a distraction to the team. It's a storyline. I mean, that's just the way of the world, but I don't think it's a major distraction.
No, just because it's like you said, it's never happened before with Sean Payton. That's the reason. But as soon as he makes that 10 reception, 112 yards, 2 touchdown first game, who cares?
I don't even think you need to go that far, Jordy. I don't think you even need to go that far. As soon as the deal's done, you know what you're getting out of Michael Thomas. I mean, who wants to be the greatest to ever play the game? It's not like he's this diva guy. He just really isn't. So I've known him. I feel like I've gotten to know him pretty well over the last 3 years. He is not this diva guy. I mean, that's my perception. Maybe I'm wrong, I feel like I got a good read on Michael Thomas, and he's not some diva guy.
Okay, Larry Holder, The Athletic. So training camp starts Friday. You got 18 of the 22 players who started the NFC Championship game returning to the roster. You add Malcolm Brown and Jared Cook, Nick Easton, Eric McCoy, Latavius Murray. They're acquired in the offseason to fill some open spots and others to upgrade spots. So as you come into training camp, let's go over some of the big question marks that are on your mind that the Saints have to address to take it a step further. What's priority number one in your book?
Uh, Well, I guess, I think it's not necessarily a job battle, but if you're looking at newcomers to positions, I think all of our eyes are going to be staring at who's snapping the ball to Drew Brees. Eric McCoy, that's his job. I mean, he'd become the number one guy 2 weeks before the end of OTAs and minicamps. So that's a given. But how will he progress? I mean, look, Max Unger was a staple, a rock with this offense, and you expected him to be stout all the time. Can Eric McCoy do that? I feel like he's capable of doing that, but we got to see it to believe it. So you start there, but then wide receiver, well, now, if Michael Thomas isn't practicing, you look at wide receiver, and those guys all competing for playing time, they're going to be seeing a lot more reps with the ones. The people on the low on the totem pole would be seeing from the threes to the twos. So the byproduct of no Michael Thomas, at least for the time being, is that these other guys will get extended reps. And I think they to round out that receiving core, I think this is actually a crazy positive byproduct of that. Now, as far as defensively, I'd look that defensive line. I'd say even defensive end and defensive tackle. I'm curious to see what happens there. All eyes are going to be on Marcus Davenport. He's coming back off of the toe injury. Can he play full-time snaps for the Saints? They're looking for him to do that because the depth behind him, that's another storyline. The depth behind those two, him and Cam Jordan, is pretty thin. And you're wondering which guys are going to take some snaps and kind of give them a breather in game situations. And then you're looking at defensive tackle. We know Sheldon Rankins, he's already on the PUP list. We all knew that was coming. David Onyemata is going to be full-time snaps outside of week one. They're going to be asking him to basically be Sheldon Rankins, play full-time snaps. Can he sustain that? And who's going to play behind him? And who's going to play week one? I mean, it's not a major deal, but it is a deal. Who's going to play in Onyemata's place come week one, and who's going to fill in? So there's some question marks, not necessarily huge position, like starting job battles, but there are important spots along this team to pay attention to.
Larry Holder, The Athletic. Saints open training camp on Friday. Michael Thomas holding out. When he's going to cut a deal with the Saints, time will tell on that one. But, you know, look, not a better tandem of field goal kicker punter than any team in the NFL than the Saints have, in my opinion. But the big question is, who's going to return kicks? Who's going to return punts? That seems to be a wide-open competition to me.
Well, they went out and signed Marcus Gerrels, who has been doing it for a long time with the Vikings. To me, it's his job, unless something crazy happens. He's, by trade, considered a defensive back. If he's ever playing defensive back, the Saints are in a heap of trouble. So I would. He's there to return kicks. Now, there's a youngster, undrafted rookie, who we didn't get to see a ton of in the early offseason, but someone I think we're going to have to pay attention to is Deontay Harris. He was a Division II player, Assumption College. I think LSU fans love Assumption College. Isn't that where Cole Tracy came from? So if you look at him that way, there's a connection there. But he's the D2 all-time leader in return touchdowns. In his junior year, he returned 8 touchdowns in the return game. So obviously the Saints are looking for something out of him maybe. So, and then, you know, we know in a pinch if Kamara needs to get back there, they will, but they want to do everything they can to limit that. But the leader in the clubhouse right now is Marcus Gerrels for sure.
Larry Holder, you did a kind of a deep dive on Drew Brees. So many people thinking that his production is going down. Look, the offensive line was banged up. The running game wasn't the same. There's a lot of factors in it, but so many people thinking there is a decline. I'm not one of those to date. What is your assessment of Drew Brees as he enters four decades?
Look, we can't deny that his play fell off the final few weeks of the season. The numbers point to it. It's there. But people are wondering, Is that just a blip? Is that Peyton Manning falling off the cliff at the end and somehow managed to scrape up a Super Bowl and had to retire because he couldn't throw the ball anymore? And so that's what I think people are wondering. And there's more concern about that in New Orleans than I really anticipated. It's almost like they forgot how good Drew Brees was from weeks 1 to 11, and then weeks 12 to 16 are what people are focusing on. And look, do I think part of what you're saying is true? I think absolutely. The O-line was a little banged up, couldn't trust the receiving core. You've got some different pieces in there to help Drew Brees as far as on the edges, so Jared Cook being one of them. And so which is it? And I think the only way we're going to know the answer to that ultimately is when we see him play. But that is the question that really I don't think you could go in and say, all right, I'm going to give Drew the benefit of the doubt, and he's given up enough reasons to trust him. But at 40, he's on the verge of 41 in January. Right. What is he? I mean, at some point it's going to happen. Like, I'm with you. Sure. Do I think he's still one of the best in the league? Absolutely. But when it comes crashing down, it comes crashing down. We just haven't seen that yet from, like, say, someone like him or Tom Brady at this point.
See, I think a quarterback like Roethlisberger, as he gets older, because I don't equate Drew Brees with arm strength and 50-yard passes. I just don't. Roethlisberger's more of that, and I think that's where you fall off. I just think Brees is smart. He's precision. He's accurate. It gets out of his hands quickly, and he moves the chains. He doesn't strike fast like some of the other ones. So I think that's why he can still compete and compete at a very, very high level.
Well, he also doesn't take hits. I mean, we see that. They cater to running the football a little bit more because they've had a better group of backs and the offensive line improved these last few years. So you've got that. And people always say, oh, so-and-so is a system quarterback. Guess what? Everyone is a system quarterback.
Absolutely.
I mean, duh. That's such a silly thing to say. And yes. And you look and the deep dive you're referring to, I took a look at all of his passes the last 3 years on the route tree. So it's about, I don't know, 12 different routes on the route tree that I dove into. And his production in most of them actually improved this past year. Wow. But people are really looking at and wondering, all right, look at the air yardage. And his air yardage is on par with the last 3 years. And it's on par, actually, with everyone who thinks is a rocket arm last year is Patrick Mahomes. So he's just doing what he's doing. I mean, I think just people are see the age and know how old he is and are assuming the worst. And look, he has not shown us the worst, not even close. But look, I understand the question though, because what we saw the last few weeks, I think he had a little bit of an uptick in the postseason, but those games are always tight, you know, so it's a different kind of a ball game there. But people need to see it to actually still believe it, some people. So, I don't blame them. I don't blame them completely, at least.
Nope. Those last games, they play against some pretty good teams with some pretty good defenses. But look, Larry, enjoy training camp. If you ever get up this way, I've got a locker room sleeping pod for you with your name on it. So come on anytime you want.
I mean, how does LSU have this awesome locker room, and the Saints are lucky to have beanbag chairs? Come on,
what's going on here? Got to pay Michael Thomas $20 million a year. They're not paying LSU players that kind of money. Come on.
Uh oh, Joe Burrow would argue they should. So don't cause any trouble, Jordy.
Oh, Larry. Thanks for the time, my friend. We'll talk to you soon, buddy. Take care.
All right, Jordy. Good talking to you, man.
You too, my friend. Larry Holder of The Athletic. Training camp is upon us out there on old Airline Highway, right by the Shrine on Airline, Saints training camp. Wow. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one next.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Hey, 54 minutes after the hour. Welcome back as we wrap up this first of two here today on this Thursday. Tomorrow could be a very special day. We may hear LSU fans hope they see that tweet, hold that Tiger, top 50 overall prospect, and maybe the best player in the state, Jacqueline Roy, will announce his college decision on Friday. It'll make it public between 5:30 and 6 p.m., so we'll be off the air, but LSU's hoping. It's between LSU, Alabama, Texas A&M. That's all you need to know. So fingers crossed, we'll see if this new state-of-the-art facility has anything to play and to say in what his decision will be. The New England Patriots, always on the forefront of things, have made a decision. Tom Brady had a new wide receiver that he was throwing to today, believe it or not. Yeah, you know who that was? Number five. This morning, more by 25-year-old Danny Etling. Danny Etling no longer playing quarterback for the New England Patriots. They're trying him out at a slot receiver. It's a new position for him. He was drafted in 2018 as a third-string quarterback. He spent the majority of last season as a member of the practice squad, but they liked him so much, every time the Patriots went on the road, they took Danny Etling with him. So they really like him. And he had a 86-yard touchdown run during New England's final preseason game. And Belichick said, I think he looked a little bit faster than we gave him credit for. So always innovative, always creative, always looking for new things. Danny Etling just hoping to make the team. Maybe he's their version of Taysom Hill. Maybe Bill Belichick's trying to steal a theme from Sean Payton, and maybe they're trying to make Danny Etling into a Taysom Hill. That's the only thing I can think of. So stay tuned for that one. Unless you're a franchise quarterback, NFL stands for not for long. You're always subject to being dismissed for the new kid coming in. So Danny Etling trying to show some versatility. Last year he played a little bit as the guy back in punt formation who blocked for the punter. So whatever it takes to make the squad, that's what Danny Etling's hoping to do. So keep an eye on that one. Coming up hour number two, more on the LSU football facilities with Brody Miller. Michael Huguenin will join us as well. All preceded by our daily edition of Hot Topics. We're brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Frankie's got everything for your travel needs, no matter how far or how close you're going. Clean restrooms and that unbelievable, true soul food deli tucked away in the corner with a cheeseburger that I'll put up against any cheeseburger in the world. That's DC's Little Capital Exxon. We're back for hour number two after this.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 103.7 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two, and away we go. Great to be with you, CD, in the 237 Roof Studios, spinning the tunes, pushing the buttons, making everything run smoothly. Yours truly, Studio 1H. Great to be with you. busy second hour, but it was 3 years ago today. Alex Bregman called it one of the best days of my life. He called it the beginning. He got called up to the big league club, and he ain't looked back since. Two-time All-Star, having a great career with the Houston Astros 3 years ago today. Didn't last long in the minors. He was a quick jettison up the charts and now a fixture at third base. With that being said, we take our time now to walk around the sports water cooler as we do each and every day. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
I forgot how quickly 3 years come and go. Man, forgot about that with old Alex Bregman, the former Tiger great and now Astro great. Good for him. Hello, CD. How are you?
Exactly, Jordy. Congrats to him, and what a great ride it has been for Alex Bregman to kind of be in the position he's in and hurried up and got straight up into the major leagues, and the Astros have never been the same. They've been just dominant ever since. Pretty darn consistent, and Jordy, they looked really, really good yesterday afternoon while you were out probably relaxing and soaking up the sun, enjoying the Chamber of Commerce day we had yesterday.
Right. Yeah, you don't know my life. There is no such thing as relaxing in the sun. No. But I'm glad the Astros won. Yeah, it's no fun giving up your show if the Astros lose. So that's the game plan that we have. If I have to give up this time slot, they better win.
Oh, trust me, Jordan. I'm in agreement with that as well. More importantly, wrap it up wrap it up around 4 o'clock. That way, Jordy Holtberg Show doesn't have to jump in due to early coverage, you know. But luckily, we haven't had that situation this year.
Oh, thanks a lot, Clint. Knock on wood on that one.
Well, Like I said, I think the rest of the year you've got everything largely in place. In the month of September, I know they don't have any afternoon games, so I think the only other getaway day you're going to have to worry about, is 2 weeks from now. But like I said,
Jordy. 2 weeks, okay.
But, of course, we got a lot to talk about, Jordy. Obviously, the biggest thing in this area, without a doubt, has to be Michael Thomas. He did not report to training camp. Honestly, to me, it's no surprise that he didn't show up for it. But my question to you is this, Jordy. Is this all to set himself up to basically try and one-up the man named Julio Jones?
I think he thinks he's the best receiver in football. I think he wants to get paid accordingly, and I don't fault him. As Larry Holder said, he's getting $1.148 million. One injury away from never playing again. Get paid while you can. I'm all for the players making as much as they can. I think this is a whole lot to do about nothing. I think it gets resolved relatively quickly, but Sean Payton still doesn't like the fact that he's not there. Sean Payton's wired to have everyone at practice, to have no distractions, to keep that team focus on one thing. So I'm sure he's already fed up and tired of being asked questions about it. So hopefully this thing gets resolved quickly.
Exactly. This thing needs to be resolved as soon as possible. But for me, I feel like it's going to be resolved. I'm going to throw it out there, Jordy, bold prediction, by the end of the weekend. Because to me and a lot of the other people that I've kind of kept an eye on, Jordy, is I brought up Julio Jones for a reason. Because of the fact that he is getting his contract negotiated as we speak, a year after he got renegotiated, whole thing. But he could wind up getting paid, let's say hypothetically, $19.5 million. Michael Thomas wants $20 million, but if he sees Julio Jones goes down to like $19.5 million, I feel like Mike Thomas would be like, all right, guys, $19.6 million. I want to be paid more than Julio Jones is, and just set that up. And that'd be like, because essentially right now, Julio Jones has a handshake contract to have that thing extended. Probably by Friday, you'll have that thing signed on the dotted line, and then Mike Thomas follows suit, let's say Saturday or Sunday.
We'll see. It's hard to believe the Saints have never paid a skill position player more than what they paid their tight end at $10 million a year. And now we're looking at Michael Thomas, $19 to $20 million a year. That's amazing how the times have changed.
It's weird, Jordy, and, you know, whenever you just...
Jimmy Graham, I forgot his name. Yeah. Jimmy Graham, of course.
Yeah, Jimmy Graham, the man that kind of petered out after the whole... After he left the New Orleans Saints and gave the Saints a lot of help on the offensive line after he left. Thank you, Jimmy Graham, for underwhelming for those years you were in Seattle.
You don't think it's directly correlated to who's throwing him the ball, huh? Drew Brees? I mean, come on. Right? How accurate is he? Makes everybody look good.
Well, I mean, you add the fact that, you know, you gave up your anchor of the offensive line. That's one of the big things I've talked about ad nauseum, Jordy, is the center is the most crucial position on the team, and they got rid of Max Unger, and that offensive line underwhelmed. And Jimmy Graham, he's not a blocking tight end. He's a passing, he's a receiving tight end, and that's why you saw those Seahawks go down the way that they did in such quick fashion.
Well, we'll see how Jared Cook and Drew Brees coexist, how that works. The Saints offensive line much better now. They got to get some depth along those lines, and that's why you're at training camp. So it's Super Bowl or bust. There's no ifs, ands, muts, or babies about it, and that's why I believe Sean Payton is like, come on, Michael, just come in. You went to OTAs. Just come to camp. We'll work this thing out. Come on. Show up.
I hope it winds up getting worked out sooner rather than later, Jordy, because this is going to wind up being a giant headache and a half. But moving over, we got to talk a little LSU basketball. Jordy mentioned the two-minute drill. It was reported a few days ago, but now LSU made it official like a referee with a whistle. You've got Will Wade, the student, taking on his former teacher in Shaka Smart as part of the SEC Big 12 Challenge. How excited are you to kind of see them back in this big like interconference event?
I love it. It's been 2 years since they've been in it. He's also playing VCU this year up at Virginia Commonwealth, and he's taking on Texas in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. It's great. That means LSU basketball is relevant. They don't put those teams that aren't any good in those things, so that's good. My question is, has LSU Texas taken over LSU Florida? LSU's played Florida in football in Gainesville forever. LSU baseball opened up this past season in Austin. LSU football's going to Austin to play football. And now LSU basketball is going to Austin to play hoop. I'm tired of Austin already.
And don't forget, Jordy, baseball this year is actually going to be playing in a neutral site, mind you. But still, they'll be in deep in the heart of Texas in Houston for the Shriners College Classic. So, Trust me, Jordy, the burnt orange ain't going away anytime soon. It's like glitter. It stays with you forever.
There's more purple and gold in Houston than there is burnt orange. I'm not worried about that. But all the other ones, goodness gracious. But they'll return the favor eventually.
Eventually. And like I said, that'll wind up happening as soon as we play Oklahoma in the regular season. Right, Jordy?
Absolutely. Bring on the Sooners. I want to see them bring that chuck wagon with the little ponies into Tiger Stadium and running around the track, and maybe Mike the Tiger will finally get in his cage, and that would be a spectacle. I've always wanted to go to Colorado and watch that buffalo run on the field. That's on my bucket list. I want to go watch that.
That would be awesome, Jordy. That would be positively fantastic to see the buffalo run around the field, and then you also have Mike the Tiger just sitting there. Just
do
waiting.
Like they did in Gladiator. Put Mike on a chain, you know. He comes out of the ground, and he's stalking around right when Nick Saban in Alabama, and he just goes so close, but yet is still so far away. That would be – I keep coming up with these creative ideas. They need to hire me.
We're too politically correct, Jordy. We got
to
get out of here.
Hire me. There's your Hot Topics brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a little bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Brody Miller, LSU Facilities, next.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers, and it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, it's the athletic day here on the Jordy Hultberg Show. I was not able to attend the ribbon-cutting ceremonies yesterday, but Brody Miller of the Athletic was there as LSU opened up their facilities, the new football ops center, the renovated football ops center. And I want to get Brody's firsthand impression of it. And no, he will not be drinking beer or red or white wine in Tiger Stadium because he'll be working. So with that in mind, Brody, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing, Jordy?
I was accurate with that, right? You will not be drinking beer or wine during the game. Maybe after the game, but not before or during.
You know, maybe I do a scene story where I try to get the booze experience at Tiger Stadium. So I'll dive in. We'll see.
Brilliant. All right. So I've been told you're hard to impress. So were you impressed with what you saw yesterday when they opened the doors to the new football kingdom of college football?
Wait, who told you I'm hard to impress?
Oh, I have spies everywhere, man. I do. I really do.
I will never deny that. It was a very impressive tour. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, I think the sleeping pods and things like that are what, like, kind of made the waves and whatnot, because that's kind of the most, I don't know, original idea coming from all of it.
Right.
But, I mean, the whole building was pretty great. And just, the word they keep using a lot is functionality. So a lot of the things that they're most excited about is kind of little efficiency things and whatnot that are going to make their lives easier. And just having everything in one building is huge for them. And that's, so a lot of the most important things from this are just the idea that everyone's lives are going to become more efficient. But I'll be the first to say, I think the thing that blew me away, but seemed the coolest to me was the walkthrough room, that, you know, gave a random bit. Yeah, absolutely. So basically it's a 50-plus foot wide, you know, big room with 12-foot high ceilings with these, you know, big four projectors that go against this massive 50-foot screen. And it basically allows LSU to put an entire lineup there and go through walkthroughs against a computer-generated simulation. So, you know, the computer can get access, like, can basically send a safety on a blitz or, you know, I don't know, make a receiver go in motion. And they have to adjust these different formations and call things out and actually go through kind of things like they would, you know, in a game setting, because these days, you know, I'm 24, I'm part of it too, so I'm not ripping on them, but, I mean, people that are young these days, it's a little harder to learn sometimes in a, you know, just kind of classroom setting where you're just getting told something or to show something on video. It's just true. So I think now Dave Aranda's vision for it, and he told our own Bruce Feldman this a few months ago, that kind of the image is, you know, maybe you do 30 minutes of team, you know, of position room talk and go through the film and whatnot, and then 15 minutes where you just walk straight through what you just learned and walk through. So I think that's going to be one of the coolest tools that Dave Aranda's really excited about, and he's the main reason they have it. He got it from Dom Capers of the Packers and brought it over, and I think he's the most excited about it. It's attached right to the linebacker position room.
That seems like that trip that LSU made, albeit in a loss at Lambeau Field up in Wisconsin, kind of was the spearhead of a lot of things with this football ops center. Maybe some bad weather, and you had to take a different kind of a plane, and voila, there comes the concept of the airplane sleep pod now inside the LSU locker room.
Yeah, right. It's kind of funny how every cool little addition of this place has its own pretty interesting backstory, and that's one of the best ones. But yeah, so the team was, you know, they lost the game to Wisconsin, and then they're about to fly back, and the main plane LSU takes breaks down. And so, I mean, most of the key personnel on the team and whatnot, they take the second plane that a lot of the support people usually take. They took that one, went back to Baton Rouge, and, you know, equipment manager Greg Stringfellow and a bunch of his team, they stayed back and got, you know, a flight on an international plane, and part of that was they were able to get first class. And, you know, he's not somebody, he jokes, he's like, I'm not somebody who normally gets to have that experience. And it was his first time in one, and he was just kind of blown away because it had that sleeping pod, it was ventilated, it was air conditioned, it was, you know, you had screens to watch stuff, and it really just kind of, he realized who's better at maximizing space in an airplane. And so he came back, him and Jack Marucci got to work. They worked with their architecture team that was building this, and I think it took a while, and they kind of had to custom build them with the team in Indiana. But they put it together, and it's something that nobody else has, because I think, you know, they thought about doing just kind of a sleeping room, which a lot of teams do, and I think they're a good idea. But their takeaway from that was you can only really sleep 10 to 15 guys in there, and that's going to lead to the same problem of people needing to sleep on the floor and whatnot to really get rest. They looked at futons, things like that. Didn't really make sense from a fit point of view. So this was perfect because you're maximizing space. It's a cool setup, and you're going to kind of break some new ground.
Pretty interesting. I've never seen in my years something like this occur, and battle lines the line in the sand has been drawn with those in favor and then those on the other side that are not in favor. And it's been quite fascinating to me to see this kind of Twitter battle going on between academic side, athletic side. Eric Reed, the former LSU football player, against it. It's been fascinating. I've never seen anything so derisive before when it comes to football.
Yeah, it's been a weird thing to follow, and I'm sure you've noticed I've kind of tried not to weigh in on it much because, I don't know, I try to live a rule of if I don't know what I'm talking about, I'm not going to dive into it too much because I have an ability to sound stupid.
Well, I better not have a radio show, Brody, if that's what I might as well shut this down.
Hey, you're a smart guy. I like listening to what you have to say. But, yeah, I think it's a weird thing where it's more, if you really just step back, it's just bad optics. That's all it is. Because I think if you have a conversation with anybody, they'll agree these things aren't mutually exclusive. Like, you can be mad that LSU doesn't have a nicer library right now. So you can get mad about that. Of course you can. You have every right to. They want better facilities there. But you can't get mad at LSU athletics, its own entity, for raising money for something it's planning. You know what I mean? Like, you can't get mad at donors for what they want to spend their money on. So it's just kind of this weird thing where it's really just about the optics, because when you really look at it, they're just separate things. And also, I mean, all the data's come out that I don't have on me about the money athletics actually gives to academics and whatnot. It's a tricky thing, but I do understand the anger. I just don't think it's remotely fair to get mad at LSU athletics for that.
I think it's all a ploy. I think for the first time it's been made an attentive viewpoint to everyone bad the library is and some of the other facilities on the academic side. So now it's up to F. King Alexander and his staff to get out there and get their fundraisers and get moving, because strike while the iron's hot, right? I mean, it just makes sense to me.
No, I think it's a really good point that is probably getting glossed over a little bit here, and I think you absolutely nailed it, that it has just created kind of some awareness about some issues, and all of a sudden you're seeing such a large portion of people get kind of galvanized around this, and I think that's going to do a lot of good, you would think. And also, I mean, and Scott Alexander, I mean, sorry, I missed the president of the AB there. Scott Woodward was talking about, you know, like, was this troubling for you and whatnot, like, to hear all this, were you surprised? And he's like, no, because it goes with what you were saying. It was just, first off, it was creating more publicity. It was more discussion, in all honesty. Like, it was just creating more discussion around this building that we have. So, one, we're showing off our building more because of these debates. And two, it's creating some goody things, because it's going to create that. You know, he always loves to quote Mark Emmert about how, Mark Emmert's favorite line was, LSU is going to be the best in physics and football and everything in between. And Woodward loves using that line. I think that applies to this exact discussion more than ever. So I really do think it's a good point that it created a lot of awareness.
Let's get to the most important question of our session. So we got past all the pods and the big amphitheater and all that. So what did Brody Miller eat in the nutrition center? That's what I want to know.
It's funny. It's one of those things where I'm like, I shouldn't eat. You know, I'm here to work. And I got really hungry, and I'm like, I got to do it. And, you know, I told myself I was doing it for the story, you know. Kind of like how I'm going to do that with the booze, right?
Absolutely.
And I had some, I had a piece of pizza that was delightful. I had some, the barbecue shrimp and grits, which I know is Chef Michael Johnson. That's one of his kind of favorite things to make. That was fantastic.
Salivating.
It was good. I had some good bread pudding. I didn't eat as much as some other people, but everything looks fantastic. There's some boiled seafood. I think I saw some gumbo. There was a pasta dish. I mean, the food there looks pretty incredible.
And, again, that's not just for football players. It's for every student athlete. It just happens to be in the football complex. I'm all for it. I think this takes, I don't know, it takes away the concept of you got to pay these players money. They get the best of everything. They get a great education. They get the best food, the best sleeping, the best equipment, the best of everything. I guess that raises a subject for another day, but my gosh, it's got to be nice to be an LSU football player, and it's got to help you when it comes to recruiting. I mean, it just all adds up.
Yeah, certainly. And, it's the Nutrition Center, that's kind of the forgotten thing is that this whole building, this whole renovation actually started with the 7 years ago, the plan was always we're going to build a big nutrition center. That was always the original right. plan. And then when they started fundraising for that, when they started making plans and where are they going to put it, they started realizing all these things they wanted. And that's kind of how this all came to be, that they realized, oh, let's actually just make this all in one facility. So I think the nutrition center was always going to be the most important thing here. And it might be, you know, number three or four in terms of things people are talking about. But I think that's probably the most important thing going on here, because just, I don't know, you see how much advances LSU's made in sports nutrition. So I think that's definitely a big thing. And yeah, to go back to what you were just saying, I mean, you're absolutely right. The quality of life for athletes right now is pretty good. And there are a lot of, you know, gray areas that are tricky and probably above my pay grade and things that I got to get figured out in the near future. But at least you can say, hey, you know, LSU, these players are a huge reason that LSU brings in so much money, that people pay all this money to see how these football right. players play. They deserve these kind of facilities. And, yeah, I'll never argue that for a second.
Well, Bernie, I can't thank you enough. Bernie Miller of The Athletic. All I know is when Ed Orgeron puts his head on the pillow at night, he's got to be saying, oh, my God, I really have no excuses now. They've given me everything I could ever imagine and then some. I better beat Alabama soon, or somebody else is going to be eating that good food and walking through those good halls. It just puts the pressure solely on him. That's another story for another day. But thank you, my friend. Thanks for sharing some tidbits with us. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, buddy. You take care. Brody Miller of The Athletic. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Michael Hugenin will join us next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station.
NBC Sports Radio Update starts now.
The last two.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Hugenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Hump day plus one since we were off yesterday, but it's always great to bring in Michael Hugenin as we are, believe it or not, Mike, we're in the 30s with days left until the start of the college football season. Even here, there was a day or two of some cool mornings. It kind of felt like fall. And, of course, it heated up to the mid-90s. But for a brief moment, it felt like football weather, and football is right upon us. How are you, sir?
Yeah, doing well. And, yeah, Arizona opens preseason camp today. Florida and Miami open preseason camp tomorrow. Wow. Those three schools plus Hawaii start playing games on August 24th. So, technically, college football is back because Arizona has started preseason camp. I think Hawaii starts tomorrow as well. So, yeah, most schools are starting August 1st, August 2nd. Yeah, it's finally here. So that's obviously a great thing.
That's great. Are we sleeping on Arizona, Kevin Sumlin? He still has no. Khalil Tate? Whatever happened to Khalil Tate?
Yeah, so Khalil Tate last year had a really bad season, earned some preseason All-America acclaim. Tate was a phenomenal running quarterback under the mm-hmm. previous coaching regime. He became more of a drop-back passer last year, or tried to become more of a drop-back passer, and was, frankly, mediocre. It will be interesting this fall to see if they let Khalil Tate be Khalil Tate, because he's not a guy who is all that comfortable sitting in the pocket, scanning the field. He's at his best on the move. Now, if he returns to form, Pac-12 South isn't very good outside of Utah. So that could be interesting, but I don't know if that staff's going to let him be what he should be, i.e. a freelancing quarterback.
That tells me it's not a very good staff. You got to utilize the talents of your players and put them in a position to do well. We'll see. Have you seen the new digs that LSU gets to practice in, their football ops center, and your thoughts on the opulence?
Yeah, it's nice. Florida's got a new locker room as well. I think Florida actually even spent more money. You know, people wonder, you know, how can, you know, schools are still talking about we need more money, we need more money, we need more money. And the SEC schools and Big Ten schools are far ahead of everybody else in terms of the money coming in from their conference TV deals, and this is what they're spending it on. So right. Football operations centers, indoor practice facilities, freshening up locker rooms around those two leagues. Interestingly enough, there was a big to-do at Indiana because some of the money that the Indiana Athletic Department is bringing in from the Big Ten Network contract, they're giving to the schools to stave off some financial problems elsewhere. And IU sports fans are livid. What are you doing spending athletic money on something other than athletics? Yeah. So it's interesting. And, you know, the ACC media days were last week and a big deal was made. Well, the ACC network is starting, I think, next week or the week after.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But, you know, the ACC schools, you know, I work for the Athletic and am closely associated with the coverage of Florida State and with Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. And we did stories with both their ADs asking, you know, what kind of financial windfall are ACC schools expecting from the ACC network? And both ADs sort of hemmed and awed and basically said, we're not exactly sure of the figures. We're going to be making more money than we used to. But both also said, we're not going to be in SEC or Big Ten territory. So, but again, in this day and age of college athletics, an extra $8, $10, $12 million is a huge deal. And that's, you know, those schools in the ACC are going to be making more money than they did before. And all, the ADs are happy, but I think they also are going to be asked often, why aren't our facilities as nice as Clemson's? Or why aren't our facilities as nice as Alabama's? Mm-hmm. And I think the answer is going to be because we don't have that kind of money.
Right. Yeah, Michael Hugan in The Athletic, kind enough to join us. You know, I always thought at one point in time there would be like a super, one big, huge conference in college football led by a commissioner. Instead, we've had all kinds of realignment throughout the course of the years. If there is a school you think that if they could go back in time and when they made the decision to move from one conference to another, if they could have a do-over, is there a school that comes to mind that you think made a huge mistake in moving from one conference to another?
UConn. UConn's men's basketball program was among the elite of the elite. And now it's, oh, yeah, they play men's basketball there, don't they? UConn's football program has sucked all the money out of the athletic program. That department's running a gigantic deficit. And I think you got to give UConn officials credit. They basically threw in the towel and said, you know something, the AAC is not working for us. We're going back to the Big East. We're a basketball school, and we'll figure out what to do with football. They're going to be an independent, not this year and probably not next year, but starting in 2021, because there is a period in which they will try to gracefully leave the AAC. But I think all the conference expansion and realignment that went on this decade, I don't think there's any doubt but that UConn is the schools that has suffered the most because, its basketball program was gigantic.
Yeah.
And now they're middle of the pack in the AAC, and that's because they left the Big East.
I would think a close second, maybe not from a financial standpoint, but I got to believe the fan base isn't very happy with Maryland going from the ACC to the Big Ten. They made a lot of money, all right, going to the Big Ten with the Big Ten Network, but for a basketball school, man, it just hadn't panned out.
No, and, you know, the Big Ten's got good basketball, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think if you're of a certain age, you're right. You remember those Maryland-North Carolina games, those Maryland-Duke games, heck, Maryland-Virginia, Maryland-NC State, and Maryland-Minnesota, Maryland-Wisconsin, Maryland-Indiana is not moving the needle right now. I think eventually it will because as the fan base gets older and older, they're only going to know Maryland and the Big Ten. And the financial aspect, though, is gigantic. They make a heck of a lot more money in the Big Ten than they've made in the ACC. And that's even without them getting a full share of Big Ten money. I think this is the last year in which they do not get the full share of TV revenue because there was a grace period, not necessarily a grace period, but there was like a 5 or 6 year stretch where maybe it was even 7, I can't remember, but you're not getting the full TV money, but you're still coming. And they're like, yeah, heck yes, we're coming. But and I also think BYU going independent, they cut off their noses to spite their face. You know, they're basically intertwined with Utah. Utah gets the invitation to the Pac-12. So BYU says, well, if Utah's not in the Mountain West, we're not going to be in the Mountain West either. We're going to be an independent in football. Their other sports dropped all the way down to West Coast Conference. And BYU, yes, they're on TV every week on one of the ESPN channels. But, you know, BYU, UMass, a lot of the games they play are garbage. And this year, though, they are playing Utah to open the season. They're playing USC. They're playing Tennessee. But I still think that if you're in the Mountain West Conference for football and basketball, BYU as a whole is better off. BYU basketball program is a non-entity now. The BYU baseball program won the West Coast Conference regular season title, did not win the tournament, so it did not make the NCAA field because West Coast Conference baseball is not very good. So I think that's another school that might be second-guessing its decision when it came to realignment and conference expansion.
Michael Hugin of The Athletic, always with insight. Every year it seems like there's a new team or a new hot coach that everybody talks about that's going to be the next big thing, either getting into a big Power 5 school or maybe even jumping to the NFL. When I mention that, what names come to your mind as far as the coaching profession? Who's going to be the hot item when we're talking next year at this time?
So I think Lincoln Riley, NFL teams are intrigued by Lincoln Riley. He's a young guy, very offense-minded. And let's get serious. Cliff Kingsbury is an NFL head coach. Cliff Kingsbury can't carry Lincoln Riley's coaching jockstrap. Let's get serious. So I think Lincoln Riley likes recruiting. He's obviously had a vastly better football program than Kingsbury was. But, again, Cliff Kingsbury is an NFL head coach. So I think that gives hope to everybody out there who has aspirations of being an NFL head coach. I think a lot of folks are looking at Neil Brown at West Virginia and saying, okay, this guy is on the fast track. This West Virginia team this year is probably not going to be very good. But I think going forward, 2020, 2021, you're going to see Neil Brown put West Virginia on pretty solid footing. He is a really good offensive-minded coach. Mm-hmm. I think that folks look at him and say, okay, he's a Troy. Beat LSU a couple years ago. Yep. People think he's on sort of the escalator's going up for him. And another guy who left the group of five ranks to go to Texas Tech to replace Cliff Kingsbury, Matt Wells at Utah State. People forget Matt Wells used to be Dave Aranda's boss. Matt Wells is a well-thought-of coach. Now, he did a phenomenal job at Utah State. He's leaving a program that's well-positioned to compete in the Mountain West because they got a high-level quarterback, and coming to a Big 12 school that's been a non-entity the last couple of years because they simply have not played a lick of defense. That's not going to change in 1 year. But I think Matt Wells will do things differently than Cliff Kingsbury. And if Matt Wells wins at Texas Tech, I think he's the guy who should move on. I don't think Texas Tech is a destination job for a football coach. You know, maybe Chris Beard will be there forever when it comes to basketball. I don't think it's a destination job for a football coach. So Matt Wells and Neil Brown, two guys who are in the Big 12, I think are guys that a lot of people in college football think are going to be successful, though not necessarily this fall.
What about that other team in the Big 12 that, boy, when they're good, it just seems like college football's better, and they had at one point in time, they got the coach that everybody was hot on in Scott Frost, and I'm talking about Nebraska. Are they ready to get back into the swing of things, you think?
Yeah, you look at the Big Ten West, and, okay, Wisconsin had a down year last year to the effect that Northwestern won the Big Ten West title. I'm not sure that's sustainable. There are exceedingly high expectations for Nebraska this year, a team that went 4-8 last year. I would argue that they need to at least reverse that record to be considered on the right track. Now, Scott Frost is a really good coach. Did a phenomenal job at UCF in two seasons. They went from the season before he got to UCF, they were 0-12. His second year, they go 14-0. Then he leaves for Nebraska. UCF went 13-1 last year, or 12-1 because they had a game rained out. because of the player Scott Frost left behind. So he's got a great quarterback in Adrian Martinez. Adrian Martinez mm-hmm. is a really good quarterback who is a phenomenal, frankly, perfect fit for what Frost wants to do offensively. Now, Scott Frost, though, I think if he succeeds, he's in his home state. He's a Nebraska alum. He started his career at Stanford, transferred, quote-unquote, home, and then led them to a portion of the 1997 national title as a quarterback. If you know, he's not leaving Nebraska for another college coaching job, but I think he is another guy who NFL teams, he's the kind of he's photogenic. He's easy going with the media. He's got a pretty cool attitude. I can see NFL teams down the road being interested in him as well. But again, I think Nebraska needs to be 8-4 this fall in that division to show the improvement they need to show. And the thing is, you look at the roster, it's an intriguing roster. They got some interesting parts offensively, especially Dedrick Mills, who was a kid who started his career at Georgia Tech, was their leading rusher as a true freshman, basically was dismissed from school, went to a junior college, signed with Nebraska. He's probably going to be their feature back. They got some pretty good receivers, an interesting offensive line, and a defense that's getting better. But, again, that team is all about Adrian Martinez. Right. And Scott Frost and him are extremely close. And, again, that's a perfect offense for Adrian Martinez.
Michael Hugan in The Athletic. Is there a group of five team that you're got your eyes on this year that could be that UCF type of a team?
Well, UCF, obviously you know I live in Orlando, and UCF is expecting another big season, though I think they're going to take at least a half step back. They obviously, Mackenzie Milton's not playing. Whether he'll ever play again is a question. Phenomenal college quarterback. And then the guy who they were probably going to replace him, Daryl Mack, broke his leg. He's going to miss probably half the season, which means Ricardo Wimbush, who was the former Notre Dame starter, it now looks to be the guy. Ricardo Wimbush, Notre Dame did not really care that he left. Nice, fantastic kid, not a high-level quarterback. And given what they've had at quarterback the last 2 years, and Mackenzie Milton, it's going to be a huge drop-off. Boise State is well-positioned at every position except two, quarterback and running back. So how good can you be if you're looking for a quarterback and you're looking for a running back? Brian Harsin's a good coach. Boise State's a really good program, phenomenal foundation. That should be a pretty good team. But I will be shocked if there's a group of five team that finishes unbeaten this year. I don't think that's going to happen.
Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. We're all anticipating the LSU-Texas game. A lot of people are curious about the Notre Dame at Georgia game that bumped LSU and Alabama out of prime time. But, boy, there's that one in Ann Arbor come November 30th, Ohio State at Michigan. The Buckeyes have dominated this thing, 63-39 a year ago. Urban Meyer's gone. Jim Harbaugh's got them at home. They've got the more experienced quarterback. They've got the new offensive coordinator. If Harbaugh doesn't win that game, I mean, the grumblings and the rumblings, right, become louder.
Right, and you look at those are extremely talented teams. And I would argue that Ohio State, top to bottom, 1 through 85, has the third most talented roster in the country, maybe even second most. It's them, Alabama, and Clemson. Quarterback is it's a concern how good is Justin Fields going to be. And Ryan Day replaces Urban Meyer. And whether you like Urban Meyer or not, the guy was an all-timer as a head coach. You can make a case that it would not be a surprise, I don't think, if Michigan and Ohio State are both 11-0 going into that regular season finale. They're good enough to both win all their games. Now, that's also – I would be mildly surprised if neither one is unbeaten, because you're dealing with 18, 19-year-old college kids, and there's going to be a bad game like Ohio State played last year against Purdue. But this Michigan team, if they find a running back, this is an interesting team. Shea Patterson had a okay year last year. I think part of the problem, we talked about Khalil Tate earlier, they're trying to make him into a drop-back passer. The same with Patterson. Now, Patterson is a better passer than Khalil Tate, but he's not a pocket guy. Shea Patterson is a gunslinger slash freelancer who can make plays on the move. They need to loosen the reins on him. And I think they may have the offensive coordinator, Josh Gattis, that's going to do that. Now, Gattis had been at Penn State, spent last year at Alabama. Now he's at Michigan. That's a guy who, you talk to folks in college football, hey, this guy's on his fast track. He'll be a head coach sooner rather than later. Maybe even next year if everything goes perfect for Michigan this year, because it will be a reflection of, hey, Josh Gattis' offense did the job. So, But Michigan's got young receivers who are talented. It's going to be a well-coached defense, though. You know, the last two times we saw the Michigan defense, Ohio State eviscerated them, and then Florida took them outside and threw them in the pool and then wouldn't let them get out and stomped on them. So those teams, the speed differential looked pretty alarming. Now, Michigan's defense, they do some things that nobody else does. They're a little bit conservative at times. We'll see if that changes. They're always extremely fundamentally sound. But, yeah, if you're an SEC fan, you need to pay attention to Ohio State and Michigan, because
no question,
they both could be unbeaten going into late November. And if that's the case, that means those two teams are going to have legit playoff aspirations in late November.
A lot of time between now and then, but we'll see how it all starts to unfold. Michael, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Excellent. Thanks, man.
I will take a timeout and wrap things up here, the Jordy Helpert Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Helpert Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Oh, what a fun day. Football season is definitely here, as the Saints will get their Super Bowl season. 10 years to the 10-year anniversary since they won their one and only Super Bowl. And they get ready to roll again starting tomorrow. How about that? Daily history lesson time. It was on this day, July 25th, the year 1966. The Splendid Splinter, Ted Williams, was inducted into baseball's Hall of Fame. He played 21 seasons for the Red Sox. He missed almost five seasons due to military service. He was named to 19 All-Star Games, won the AL MVP twice, and was a career 344 hitter. The last to hit over 400 for a season. The Splendid Splinter, arguably the greatest hitter by many historians of all time in the game of baseball, inducted into the Hall of Fame on this day, July 25th, 1966. If today's your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great day. You share it with the likes of happy 51st birthday to Matt LeBlanc. Special thanks to all of our guests today. Special thanks to Clint Domain for putting it all together. Special thanks to all of you for listening and to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Man, we couldn't do it without you. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Helpert Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Oh, what a fun day. Football season is definitely here, as the Saints will get their Super Bowl season. 10 years to the 10-year anniversary since they won their one and only Super Bowl. And they get ready to roll again starting tomorrow. How about that? Daily history lesson time. It was on this day, July 25th, the year 1966. The Splendid Splinter, Ted Williams, was inducted into baseball's Hall of Fame. He played 21 seasons for the Red Sox. He missed almost five seasons due to military service. He was named to 19 All-Star games, won the AL MVP twice, and was a career 344 hitter, the last to hit over 400 for a season. The Splendid Splinter, arguably the greatest hitter by many historians of all time in the game of baseball, inducted into the Hall of Fame on this day, July 25th, 1966. If today's your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great day. You share it with the likes of happy 51st birthday to Matt LeBlanc. Special thanks to all of our guests today. Special thanks to Clint Domain for putting it all together. Special thanks to all of you for listening and to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Man, we couldn't do it without you. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.